find a seat. We'll give a 60-second warning because we're having conflicting timepieces over here. It's either 5:28, 5:30, or 5:31, so... Wow, that was actually pretty quick. Everybody wants to get started, so why don't we call the meeting to order at 5:31? And is Carissa here? Who's calling the roll? Carissa, if you would call the roll, and then I'm going to turn it over to Madam Chair here.
Mr. Brower.
Here.
Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Ms. Gertman?
Here.
Ms. Wheeler?
Here.
Mr. Robbins?
Here.
Ms. Post?
Here.
Dr. Lowry?
Not here.
He's on his way.
Ms. Cuthbert?
Mrs. Cuthbert is here. Yes, thank you.
Jamie Haynes?
Here.
Ms. Burnett?
Here.
Mr. Persis?
Here.
Mr. Cologne?
Here.
Okay, and with that, and maybe by way of, I just got message that Councilman Lowry was stuck in traffic. Is anybody from FDOT here? No. So I'm going to turn it over to Chairwoman Linda Cuthbert to introduce the school board members and to give you some instructions on what to do when you want to speak.
Ms. Cuthbert,
Yeah. Can
you make sure that your mic is on when you're speaking?
There it is. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I would like to make sure that you all are acquainted with our school board members. To my left is my vice chair, Ms. Jamie Haynes, representing District 1. To her left is Mr. Carl Persis, representing District 4. That's our school board, District 4. To his left is Mr. Ruben Colon, representing District 5. To his left is Mrs. Anita Burnett, representing District 2. To her left is our superintendent, Dr. Scott Fritz. To his left is Ms. Carol Yoon, who is our, she's substituting for Mr. Ted Doran this evening, our school board attorney. Thank you, Ms. Yoon, for coming. And then we also have staff from the school board over here on our left side in this corner. Okay. Chairman.
Thank you. And to my right is the co-chair, Billy Weir. And I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves so we can try your voices out in your microphones.
Oh, sorry, I thought we already did that. Hi, Bob Gertman, District 1.
Heather Post, District 4.
Dan Robbins, District 3.
Ben Johnson, at large.
George Recklinghall, County Manager.
And Suzanne Conchin, Deputy County Manager.
And Mike Dyer, County Attorney.
Very good. And to before we really get started, I would like, if it pleases both boards, to, I'm looking around the room, I know she was here somewhere, the Supervisor of Election, Lisa Lewis. There, right across from me. This affects you as much as it affects us, and I would like to hear how it affects you, the voters, the cost, all the particulars. So if you would like to speak to both boards, please.
Sorry. Good evening, and I do thank you, both boards, for listening to me for the last 2 years that I have begun my trek on asking if we could have our lines come together, both school board and county council. And so I thank you for a few minutes tonight for me to beg, plead, present my case one more time to each of you, whatever you want to call it, but I do want to speak to you tonight. And I will tell you, I truly, truly mean this from the bottom of my heart. I do not envy your task. It's easy for me to ask for you to have the lines come together, but it's hard for y'all to have that happen, and I truly understand that. But I hope after me speaking and pleading my case that we can have this happen. This is addressed to both bodies as a collective whole, not to any one person whatsoever, because I know many of you on a personal level, both before I came into this job and since then. And I respect each of you for what you're doing and the call to duty to represent this county, both on the school board and for the council. In January of this year, I knew that criteria was offered from the county council to Ms. Slack and GIS for when the numbers did come in of to start making maps. And I understand, because I was at one of the meetings, although it may not have been officially set, that the school board adopted some of the same criteria, or maybe not adopted, but talked about. And that's that the residences of the council members or school boards be in their current districts, no two members in one district would be there. Population differences from the districts would hopefully be kept between plus or minus 1% in each one of them. Preserve the integrity of the municipal boundaries when at all feasible. And I know that that cannot happen totally, but I can always wish. Keep intact large concentrations of minority populations and preserve territorial community interests. So when those numbers did come in, when we finally got the official ones, some in August and then officially in September, I know that the GIS from both entities went to work in making maps. Volusia County has grown. This is not something new to everyone. We grew by almost 60,000, and wouldn't it be the easiest thing if each of the five districts grew by almost 12,000 in each one, and we'd have no problem. But we do have to, you are tasked with redrawing lines for each of the districts. And you're to ensure that each of them is equal in representation at all levels of government. That's what redistricting is. And although the census numbers are the ideal populations, redistricting is based on the electoral boundaries for elections, so that you elect the representatives, that voters can elect the representatives for their address. So it's not drawing school boundaries to have the children know which school to go to. That's not what redistricting is. It's not for drawing municipal boundaries, because that's done via annexations, which we all know happen just about every day in our county. Because those boundaries are drawn as needed throughout the years. As I know, the council knows, because I have to bring them to them for them to approve our lines when we have to redraw them. So in essence, redistricting is for elections and electing the representatives. The state constitution prohibits political favoritism while protecting the rights of minority voters. It requires districts to be compact, contiguous, and roughly equal in population, and to follow city or county lines where feasible. And local governments like yourself can adopt much the same criteria. As I mentioned, it's grown almost 60,000. I would love that each district be just the 12,000 each, but each district is going to need to adjust. So the opportunities presented to the supervisor of elections office when the lines do not come together or they are not aligned together, it's additional precincts and polling locations, which is additional cost to rent those places that we have to find. It's additional ballot styles, splits or more precincts, depending on what we want to call them. We either have 600 precincts or we have 125 precincts with some splits in our terms. Currently, Lake Helen has 9 splits. So when you have a primary election, that's possibly 27 ballot styles, because we run by party. In the primary elections, we have to put a Republican, a Democrat, and a nonpartisan ballot out for each of the respective voters. So Lake Helen right now has 2 school board seats and 2 county council seats, 1, 3, and 5 collectively. Precinct 602, which is up on the map here, and it's the yellow part of the, oh, thank you. This yellow area is most of it, and coming down in here a little bit. 602 has 13 splits. That's a possibility of 39 ballots for one precinct that we would have to print. There are three county council seats there, 2, 3, and 4, and four school board seats, 2, 3, 4, and 5, in one precinct. So printing costs, because we print on a 100% hopeful turnout. We won't be written in the paper for having too many ballots. We'll be written for not having enough. So we plan for 100% turnout. There's always hope. It presents precinct challenge, along with printing the ballots just for voting day, we print sample ballots that are mailed out. So when you have different ballot styles, it's different sample ballots that are mailed to each of the voters. That's another cost. Presents precinct challenges, finding hosts to have us conduct the elections. As you know, last year we ran into quite a few facilities that did not want to host elections anymore. We partnered with the school board, and that worked out great.
23, I think.
20, yes, that was my numbers. 23 schools we used. On the same token, the county allows us to use buildings also. We use all of the libraries, just about all the regional libraries for early voting. It's a great partnership with both of you. And I can't tell you how much I do appreciate that, because in listening to other counties, they don't have that great of a relationship. Along those lines, and I have never ever wanted to play this card, but there is a statute that states any tax-supported building can be used as an elections precinct, any one of them. I have asked nicely for some and been told no. I have been able to find some, but we're to the point now where we can't find precincts. But there's, most importantly, with not only the cost, but the confusion among voters on why does my neighbor vote on this school board or this county council and I vote on this one. And there, we're going to have that at times, because there are streets that we use that you're going to have as a dividing street where one is this district, one's another. But if we can lessen that by coming together, I think we'll diffuse a lot of that confusion. And then municipalities are split. And I know, as I said before, that can't be helped. We have large cities, but maybe not split cities that are less than 15 to 20,000 voters. You know, our smaller cities are more of a community, and we hopefully can keep them that way. Now, while the Supervisor of Elections is not responsible for redrawing the lines, the district lines, we inherit those lines. And when we inherit those, we then have to draw our precinct lines, which means the people that are within those districts are voting on the same thing and making that a precinct. And when you have different lines that don't come together, that presents more of an issue for finding the locations, as I mentioned, and the cost. So once we look at where all the voters are is where we start trying to draw precinct lines and putting them like people alike. In the last redistricting process, we had to create several new precincts due to these lines being different. Tallahassee, as they're, I don't know that they've started committee meetings, but when they draw their line, they have to draw for the whole state. I cannot imagine doing that, and I don't think anybody in here can imagine doing that, especially the GIS people we have that have just drawn these. But they draw for the whole states. While I have spoken to some of our legislative delegation about this and keeping some cities together, and not like Lake Helen, I'm sorry to keep bringing that up, but it looks like that's where spaghetti was just thrown, and you have all these different, it seems to be where everybody met was right there, and like little Lake Helen that has 2,500 voters is split those nine different ways. But in on the local level here is where we can do something closer to our community in coming together. I will tell you, again, this is from my heart, and this is more me personally speaking. I'm sorry that these maps have gotten in the way of us coming together. Because as I have spoken to, maybe not each of you personally, Mr. Robbins, I didn't, because he was just came on, and this was a goal for everyone, was to have these lines come together. I was hoping that these maps would be shown to everyone at the same time, and possibly even making them anonymous, where you had no idea who drew them. So it wouldn't be fair all the way around. But right now, I ask that each of you think about what's best for the people and the voters of our county. If a city is divided, and we have to do that, aren't two representatives a benefit to them? Wouldn't a school benefit from having two representatives come and read? Would it, when an item comes before each board, you don't only vote on what's in your district. You vote on everything as a whole in this county. So you represent all of us, all of you. That's what y'all are tasked to do. Your vote counts for each and every person in this county, whether they're a registered voter or not. So we, and when I say we, it's each of you, it's the citizens of this county, and it's myself. We have a chance to come together within our county. It's going to take compromising. No one map is the best. I think that we can blend some together, and I hope that, as Ms. Slack had mentioned to me earlier, maybe some of these maps can be overlaid, and we can see where there are common areas and maybe adjust on both parts that will make all of us happy. But there is one thing. You won't make everybody happy. As you very well know, in any decision you make when y'all are voting on anything before you, not everybody is happy. But this is not me. It's not I. This is us and we as a group of people, as these two collective boards. It's not about one person. It's about all of us as a whole. And as I mentioned, you won't make everybody happy. But I only ask you again to think about the voters and the people of this great county that we live in. I was born and raised here. I've never had a desire to live anywhere else. But I hope that we can come together with this. But I will tell you that if it doesn't happen, we will persevere, just like we have been. It just makes a lot of confusion. So I appreciate your time and your ears for listening to me, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try and answer.
Okay, before we are able to ask her any questions, both boards have a little yellow card in front of them. What Councilman Bauer, Chairman Bauer, and I decided was that we would take turns. So if you would like to ask a question, please put your card next to your nameplate. That way I can check to see who on the Volusia County School Board would like to speak. And Councilman Brower will be looking to see who on the council wants to speak at that time, and then we will alternate. Board member, council member, and we will call on our own boards respectfully. Okay, since we're the guest, and he has home rule, we decided that even though I got to introduce everybody first, he gets to call on the first councilman or women who might have a question for Ms. Lewis.
Well, thank you. First, I just want to say, Lisa, that those were tremendous words as an introduction and as our goal today. I couldn't agree more. That we, our goal has to be focused on every one of the voters. And I do want to clarify one thing. I see Barb Gertman has a question for you. You said that, I think the way I heard it, that we both had a goal of not plus or minus 1% difference. I don't believe that's the case with the school board.
You don't have to. I mean, I know that that's what y'all wanted. And I know that the school board didn't officially say that, but I would hope that that's what they would want. And if they don't, that's, I mean, it's not set in stone anywhere unless it's...
Right, I just wanted everybody to know that there was a difference, that we had said 1%, and did y'all agree on the number?
I don't know that they said a percent, to be honest with you.
No?
No, we did not.
Okay.
I don't think collectively.
Barb Gertman?
Thank you, Chair. I just had a question. You mentioned cost savings, and I just want to know, do you have numbers that quantify what type of cost savings would be seen by, or the potential savings by aligning?
Well, when the lines come together, that's less precincts or less splits, less differences in our precinct lines. So therefore, there's not as many ballot styles that we would have to print or sample ballots that we mail out. And if anybody has costs printed or mailing lately,
okay,
that's where most of our budget is, outside of personnel.
Okay, but you haven't considered if it's less plus or minus, what type of savings you might accumulate by...
Well, right now, we have 179 splits, or precincts for lack of a better word, because of all the different lines that are within county. And that's municipal, CDDs, you know, hospital authority. It's not just county council and school board. But this would bring that number down if we were together. But when you multiply 179 in a primary election by the times three, 587 ballot styles, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. So 587 ballot styles to be printed, to be put out at the precincts. Early voting, luckily we have done ballot on demand now, so it's, as somebody checks in, it prints. We don't have to have, I wish I could have found the picture to show you what it used to look like with all the ballots lined up in early voting. But at the precincts also. So in Lake Helen, when somebody goes in there to vote on a primary, they potentially could have 27 ballot styles that the poll worker then has to make sure that they choose the correct one to give to the voter, because that voter is specific as to what they should be voting on.
Okay, thank you.
So I don't have a number. I do know it would be less with less styles.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Your words were very heart-wrenching. And I know it was probably very difficult for you to say some of those. We will do, I'm sure, all of us together, we're all Volusia County residents, we'll all do what we can to make you a little bit happier, especially in the month of November and the weeks preceding it. We are all, I guess, very cognizant of our voters, mm-hmm. And it's important to make them less stressful and less confusing. So, but thank you. Thank you for those kind words. And I would like to call on my Vice Chair, Jamie Haynes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lewis, because I too agree your speech was very heartfelt, and I had no idea you had 587 different ballot styles. That's a lot. My question, though, tonight is, so when it was discussed about what the county already selected as the criteria that they wanted to follow when looking at redistricting, is it a local or state law on the plus and minus 1%, or was that just the county selected a plus or minus 1%?
Sabrina Slack, Assistant County Attorney. The plus or minus 1% is a legal requirement. It's derived from case law from the Supreme Court of the United States. So essentially the case law is that you should have equal populations in all of your voting districts. However, the case law states that they understand that equal is not possible due to geographic boundaries, municipal boundaries, all other kinds of sort of considerations. So with local jurisdictions such as ourselves, the case law in fact states that you can get away from plus or minus 1%, which is a total 2% deviation in your populations. However, as you go away from equal population, your districts are subject to challenge based on the reason why you left equal population. There is a case out there that says a plus or minus 5% or a total of 10% deviation is prima facie acceptable if you can show why you varied from equal population. So essentially the best way to think of it is, the way it should be is that each person who is on the board or on the council representing a district, they should be representing the same number of people. Otherwise, if you have a large population in one district, you're diluting that district's vote. And if you have fewer people, you are actually empowering them more because fewer people are electing, say, one district versus if fewer people are electing one district and more people are electing another district, then the people who have a stronger vote in districts where there's lesser populations. So that's why the county council directs us to stay within a 2% deviation, because that is safe and not subject to a challenge, basically, because you're well within the safe zone. But there is case law that says you can go up to 5% plus or minus, total 10%. But like I said, you have to then have a reason that substantiates why you've left a near equal population.
Thank you, Mrs. Slack. And one of the reasons why I had asked that was, let's use Lake Helen, for example. You know, there we have a very small population, and yet it's being torn apart by, are you within the city limits? Are you in the county part, not in the city limits? And I myself in 2018 faced that when I went there and spent almost 10 hours on a Saturday walking and knocking on doors, where one door was actually in District 1 for school board, the next door may be in District 5 for school board. And then also what's happening, or what happened the last time the maps were created 10 years ago, is we had members crossing east and west. And you know, there is some population out there in the center, but there's not a whole lot. And I truly feel that if I were to cross from the west side over to the east side, that the east side's not going to get the fair representation that they need, you know, when it's, you know, 50 minutes away in a drive. And I feel the same way about if the east side crosses over to the west side. So it wasn't until last Tuesday night that we learned that the plus or minus one was not totally steadfast. And Noah, as a school board, we did not vote one way or the other. I would like for people to kind of be open to possibly a plus or minus 2% if we can keep places like Lake Helen and all that intact. So whether they live within the city limits or they're in the unincorporated piece, you don't have that many different ballots, you know, going into Lake Helen. So that's why I needed to ask that question, because I wasn't sure if it was law or not. Thank you.
Ruben Colon.
Yes, thank you. So I guess my question is for my counterparts on the county. You know, one of the challenges that we have as a school district is we share the schools. And typically within our district, we look at, for example, in my district, I have 15 schools. And so we sort of look at those boundaries, not so much at keeping, you know, I want to keep this school or I don't want to keep that school, versus the area that I represent. Typically, for the most part, the students who go to school, one of the schools that I happen to represent. And so did any thought process go into that when you all developed your map? Because I know typically you all are looking at numbers of populations of folks, but arguably in my area in Deltona, we have high density, and we ended up being really short counted this time. I felt like it was. And so now I need to expand greater. I think I have to go up by, I think it was like 7,000 or something like that. And so the question then comes in, do I go into Orange City? Do I go up to Lake Helen? And so every single move that we make may add 2 to 3 schools to the district that already has 15. As far as representation wise. And so I say this so that you can sort of understand where my thought process is it's, you know, it seems like we have a lot more moving parts than just numbers of people. And then I know that it's the goal of the council to keep the municipalities as much as possible together. And so, yet the current map that we have now splits DeBary in half, which has experienced more growth than it had 10 years ago. So should DeBary be split in half anymore? And so those are the questions. And so I guess my question is to my counterparts, if you all even took that into any consideration, because arguably I could end up with 20 of the 72 schools, and there's five of us.
Sabrina Slack, Assistant County Attorney. You're getting into my PowerPoint and taking all my thunder away. just to summarize the process. So this process would typically have started in March. We would have gotten the census data. We would have shared everything. But what we did was back in January, we actually started this process of establishing the criteria. And then we reached out to the school district staff. And they assembled a team, and we assembled a team. And the teams have been working collaboratively since probably June. On the different things that each were brought in. So we had, there was a sharing of all information between our GIS staffs, sharing of the criteria. So all of the maps, unfortunately, because we're on such a condensed time frame, we're kind of working parallel with the two teams to bring the maps then together. So yes, we did. We had meetings in June. We had some in August. We've been collaborating via phone, via emails about the criteria, and then creating the maps. So yes, we have been working together on the staff level for quite some time.
I'll respond to that just a little bit, just with a question, because you do have a consideration that we don't, schools in your districts, and I didn't understand it fully of how you are approaching it. I was educated a little bit by your chair and vice chair. I'm wondering if either one of them would be willing to, and I'll tell you what I heard that I hadn't thought about, is that you may have voters in your district that vote for you, but they send their children to a completely different, a school in a completely different district. So how does that affect you? Do you, either one of you are brave enough to take that up?
It is very difficult. We are very cognizant of the fact that an elementary feeds into a middle school, which feeds into a high school. We try to keep that conclusive as much as possible. If we share, for example, I share Port Orange with Ms. Burnett, and then, of course, I think District 3 touches almost every district, yeah. At least every district. So it looks like Mr. Robbins and I are going to have to take on some more territory. So when you look at some of these maps, from Lake Helen all the way to Ponce Inlet, from Port Orange all the way to Oak Hill, and then also down 415 into Osteen and even Enterprise, all the way to DeLand, I may end up with one middle school, and that's New Smyrna Middle. I could very easily lose my second middle school, but I would have two high schools. Another map, Ms. Burnett could have three high schools, three middle schools, and in District 1, which is the largest territorial geographically, would have one high school and one middle school. So there are a lot of to consider, because we all visit the voters, but our job is to visit the schools and to take care of the parents and the community members surrounding those schools. So you said you have 15 schools. I have 12, and I think I'll call on Ms. Haynes, because you'll be astounded at the number of schools she has in her district. Ms. Haynes.
So one of the things that happened at the last census 10 years ago is the unincorporated area of De Leon Springs just kind of got carved out and pushed over to District 4 for the school board to Mr. Persis. But those students that actually go to McGinnis Elementary transition on to Taylor Middle High. And that leaves Mr. Persis coming all the way across the county just to a small geographical location with a single school, which pulls him away at times from the schools that are near and more tightly close together. So that was one of the things that our group built, you know, four maps, and then they said, Ms. Haynes, we always thought McGinnis was yours because you talk about it all the time, because I do, because I have to drive past it to get to Pearson, to go to Pearson Elementary and Taylor Middle High. So I either stop there on my way up or my way back every time. And so part of how we approach this, and I will say, just like Ms. Gertman, she is very similar to me. We go up and touch the Astor, you know, line. We have Pearson and Seville coming all the way down. I do have the west side of De Leon Springs unincorporated, but not the east side. So that's an interesting split. That's taking a community then that we're not keeping together and representing them because they're in unincorporated. I come down into DeLand, Lake Helen, but only part of Lake Helen, because Mr. Colon and I, he takes unincorporated Lake Helen, and he has students that live in Deltona that go into Volusia Pines, where I take the city limits. We come into Orange City, and I come into Orange City, and then I have all of DeBerry currently, where Ms. Gertman has DeBerry split in half, and it's not even split in half east and west, it's split in half north and south. And yes, you know, 35 years ago when I came here, DeBerry wasn't a city. It was a very tiny, unincorporated community of about 2,000 people. But we're bordering on 23,000 people right now, and it's a city. And I will tell you, even campaigning in DeBerry last time, people had no idea. They're like, do we vote for you for school board? Do we not vote for you for school board? Because when they look at where the split is for the county, it's very confusing, and some of them did not even know until they went in and their ballot was handed to them. Did they know, were they voting for Ms. Gertman, or were they voting for Dr. Lowry? Were they voting for me? Or, you know, were they voting for Ruben? And so those are the types of things I think that I took into account, and that's what I told our group when they presented us with the first four maps, is we need to look at the feeder patterns, because I encompass right at almost 20 schools, but geographically I travel from north of Volusia County all the way to the southernmost point, and that's fine. I mean, and I'm very happy to represent every one of those schools. Mr. Colon and I work very well together because we predominantly cover the west side of the county, and if he's double booked on an event, he'll call me sometimes and I'll go cover. If I'm double booked on an event and he's free, he'll cover. And we do that. And that was part of what I actually had said to Dr. Fritz last week, was just trying to not cross from east to west side. Because I feel when you make that cross and you pick up maybe a community with 2,000 or a part of a community, how much of your time are they getting? And like, are you really representing them well if you're representing the other 108,000 people that are sitting over on the east side? You know, just to get to the magic number of 110. And so that is part of what I took into consideration, because there's a new map that was just presented to us. I think we got it Thursday night. And it has Ms. Cuthbert losing her largest middle school and her largest elementary school, but she keeps the high school that they feed to. So that just doesn't make sense to me, because it is about building relationships. And I'm not saying that as council members you don't build relationships, but that's what we do every day, is build relationships with the community and the students. I hope I answered the question.
Heather Post.
Well, Ruben, you had asked about, you know, if we were really thinking about it from the school board stance, and I can tell you I run into Carl all the time at schools in my district, for sure, and greatly appreciate the work that he and that you guys do. And In talking with staff, that was actually one of the questions I had, was the maps that we have, that I've seen both suggested from the school board and also from council side, didn't actually have the schools noted on them. And so I don't know if I'm stealing any thunder. Hopefully you have, somebody has that at some point during this meeting. But to me, that's very important in making my decision, in discussing it with the school board, is for us to be able to visually look at the maps and see where those schools are. So yes, it, to me, it absolutely has been discussion, and I appreciate you asking. So, but on that note, do we have a map somewhere, I'm hoping,
we
as
have
requested?
That overlay, correct?
the school district has provided us with their, we didn't have that. So the way this works is our GIS, they have a software product that they use to draw these maps. So we have to be provided certain layers to add those layers to the maps. So in a perfect world, if we had had a ton of time, all of this information would have been able to have gotten to us quicker. We just recently received the school district placement, so tonight we can show you the maps and where all the schools are located within all of the maps. So on the agenda, what we were going to do is, after we went to the PowerPoint, when you went into the discussion, we were going to load up the interactive GIS software so that we can show you each map with all of the schools placed on that map. We do not have the feeder or the zone boundaries, but we do have the pinpoints for the schools now, that those can be added to the map. That information was provided to us.
But the maps that you're going to show us are just going to be the geographical maps with the pinpoints of the schools on them, not the district suggested district lines as well?
We can load up each district with each proposed plan, with each line, the existing districts. We can overlay them. We can add information into those. So that's what we are building up to for the discussion. So if anyone has any questions about how one plan compares to another, we can overlay those. If anyone has any questions about where the schools lie in any particular plan, we can now populate those schools on there. They're color-coded by elementary, middle, and high schools.
Perfect. So school board side, just to know for the rest of the evening, any information that you can give us on that end would be great if we're not seeing that exactly until later. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, with that said, and with your approval, why don't we go back to the agenda and actually have the presentation, and then the way that the agenda is written, you will make the presentation, and then we will hear from the public that is here, and then we will discuss again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
This is a PowerPoint that is basically the PowerPoints that both boards have seen individually. We've put them together collectively. And I wanted to start out by thanking some of the members of the school district that we've been working with, Kevin Penley, their attorney, Mr. Doran and his staff, Joshua Sheldon with your GIS department, Stephanie Dostin, your planner. I don't know where everyone is. And then on our side, our team, our GIS staff, which is Brandon Barnett and Nancy Church, our community information team, Pat Kuhn and Kevin Captain. Everyone's been working very hard to try and get this done in as a timely process as we possibly can and as collaborative as we possibly can. So I'm going to run through this PowerPoint. And again, like I said, what we did was we took the PowerPoints that were presented by both, added a few slides, and went back through it. So some of this we already went through in the open discussion, but why are we redistricting now? The county council is required to do it by the Florida Constitution, Article 8, Section 1E, which requires after each decennial census that we actually create our redistrict so that we have contiguous territory as nearly equal in population as possible. And the school board is actually statutory. It's Section 1,136(1). For the purpose of electing district board members, you're also required to create residence areas numbered 1 to 5, and they have to be as nearly practical be equal in population. And that's where you get that language in answer to Ms. Haynes' question. That's where the language comes that the case law then interprets as high as the United States Supreme Court. So as nearly as practicable as come down to mean to do as low a deviation as possible. So our redistricting timeline, just to catch up to where we are, September 16th, 2021 is when the census actually certified the data to us so that we could actually start this process. It gives us 106 days to process the data in order to finish it in the odd year. That's including weekends and holidays, which if you take out the weekends and holidays, we are really on a very short time crunch. So in that timeline, we have to create proposed plans, we have to coordinate meetings, we have to revise the plans, we have to circulate the plans, we have to have public comment, we have to finalize a plan, we have to draft an ordinance or resolution depending on the board. That includes a legal description for the voting boundaries to be provided to the supervisor of election. And then we both boards respectively have to either pass or finalize an ordinance or pass a resolution. So this is less than half of the normal time frame. So we are really trying to move this as quickly and efficiently as possible. So the purpose of redistricting, and this is the cases that I was talking about earlier, Ms. Haynes. So the United States Supreme Court, the principle is one person, one vote principle, so that you design legislative districts with equal population. However, they've recognized in the case law when drawing state and local legislative districts, jurisdictions are permitted to deviate somewhat from perfect population to accommodate traditional districting objectives. Among them would be preserving the integrity of political subdivisions, maintaining communities of interest, and creating geographical compactness. And if you recognize, that's where we get our criteria. You'll see that they're generated through these cases. But again, as I was explaining earlier, what you're really looking for is a district that has as many people in it, so each person that's sitting on a board represents the same number of people, and you're not diluting anyone's vote just for a purpose that's not what is recognized as a traditional districting challenge, for lack of a better word. So the redistricting criteria we have in common, and these are really the ones that basically you don't want to run awry of these for case or statutory reasons. Redistricting, both of us have to do it in odd-numbered years only. We have to have five districts. They have to be nearly equal in population as practicable. Geographically contiguous areas, that basically means you can't have a District 1 that is separated. All the boundaries have to be together, plus you want to keep them as compact as possible. You want to keep residents of their current district holders in the same district, and you don't want to district two people into the same district. You want to keep intact large concentrations of minority populations, preserve territorial communities of interest, preserve municipal boundaries where feasible, and consider election districts. Now, this is actually where we differ, and they're not huge differences. The school board's criteria is keeping schools in single districts where feasible. And the county council, we have actually placed on ourselves the plus or minus 1 or 2% total deviation from near equal population. We have to consider special taxing districts, consider population densities, and consider economy of government operations. That's actually in our ordinance, not the plus or minus 1, but the last three criterias. Otherwise, we pretty much have the same criteria. So these are the numbers, and we've all seen these before, but I have to keep emphasizing that the entire county has grown. So we talk about districts being over or under in population, but we have to keep focused on that everyone's grown, and that we're just, for purposes of equalizing, is why our numbers have to be moved up or down. And as you can see, the comparison, this is the first step in redistricting. This is plugging the 2010 numbers into the 2020. Plugging the 2020 numbers into the 2010 map and seeing where the changes fell. So, you know, just so you can see, District 1, we both have in common, our District 1s grew the most. And for the school board, it was a 16,694 change, and ours was a 15,221 change. But, so the total population adjustments we have to do, That's where we start. And that target population range is the plus or minus 1. I mean, that's the safe harbor. So here you see that the existing school board districts, you have district two, four, and five are under the range, District three is within the range, and your District one is over range by 9,095 from the equal population. So for the purposes of the school board, and just to go back, Stephanie and I drew straws, and I drew the short straw on who had to present this between the school board planner and I, so so that's why you get to listen to me all night. So that's the school board deviation from the equal target population, which would require you to adjust districts 1, 2, 4, and 5. So the county council, because we had different lines, our district 1 was still the largest growth, but we were only at 4,724. So with our district 1 ended up over, districts 2 and 3 under, and 4 and 5 actually landed within range. So that's where we were with our existing lines. So once we had the first step done, this is the timeline that we actually followed for making the maps. So back in January and then in June, when the census data didn't come out, the councils met, and I meant to put the school board's meeting in this timeline, I apologize, but I think it was around June the school board met and had their criteria also added before the census data was released. Back in June, they were still not sure when the data was going to be released. September 30th was the date back then, but on August 12th we got what they call legacy data, and that was the equivalent of getting a shoebox full of receipts. It was very jumbled and unusable. So not until September 13th did we get data that we could start making maps, and that's when both the county GIS and the school board GIS created a share file, started sharing information, and started creating maps. So on September 29th was the first time that any of our council members saw a map. It's also the first time we released those to the school board. And then on October 11th, we received additional maps from the school district. And I will tell you, these maps are not easy to make. They take time, they take effort. They can take anywhere from 72 hours, which is 3 days, up to 5 days, because it's really, each time you adjust something, it's like a butterfly effect that has to be moved over. And then you have to catch errors, you have to run diagnostics. These things take a lot of time. So our two GIS teams worked the best they could in coordination, and then we kind of got a rolling time frame of map releases. So the maps. We now have maps A through M. So I'm just going to go through the maps hitting the high points and showing you what we call the jigsaw comparisons. So map A, this was a starting point of the existing county council lines. All of the district lines are changed for both the this would change all district lines for school board and county council, and it would split municipalities of Daytona Beach, Port Orange, and DeBary. And you can see the target population's well within the range. This is the jigsaw comparison for the school board, and you can see where the changes are there. It's a significant change for your number five and number three. This is the jigsaw comparison for the county council, which we just basically minimally adjusted all of our lines, so everything's moved for each district just slightly. So then we have plan B. This plan originated with the existing school district lines. So the starting point for this one was where the school district lines are currently, and then lines were adjusted to equalize the population. What you're seeing here is that DeBary, Port Orange, and the land on the north side of the land is actually split in this plan. So here's your jigsaw. You still have the push out there into four pushing out into the Leon Springs for the school board, and then the school district, and then the county council. And the big change there is that little finger of two that has to reach out to equalize the. So plan C, so our GIS team tried to come up with reimagining the line so that we could see what could be different if every line was possibly changed. So this is a urban-rural mix, so that all of the districts have a little bit of urban, a little bit of rural area. We are changing all the lines for both the council and the school board, and we're going to split Daytona Beach, Port Orange, DeBary, New Smyrna Beach, and Edgewater in this map. And if you notice, District 5 creates a total east to west sort of district at the bottom of the the county, whereas 4 creates a urban to rural down into the center of the county. So this is your jigsaw comparisons. And then we have Plan D. Plan D was a north to south kind of reimagining of all of the lines. So in this one, districts 3 and 2 reach from the northern to the southern border of the county. And then it creates 2 sort of urban, 1, 5, and 4 create an urban. And on this one, we're splitting the municipalities of Daytona Beach, Port Orange, DeBary, Ormond Beach, New Smyrna Beach, Edgewater, and Oak Hill. And here's your jigsaw comparisons. And if I'm going too fast, you can slow me down, but I know we've all kind of been through this. So this is Plan E, and this is another urban-rural mix similar to Plan C, except for in the north you have the east-to-west district and 4 reaching across. It reshapes all of the lines for both the council and the board, and we're splitting only Daytona Beach and Port Orange in this map. So here's your jigsaw comparisons. And then we have Plan F. And Plan F is back to the existing county council lines with keeping 4 and 5 exactly as is because they were in range. This one takes Lake Helen and the unincorporated areas around Lake Helen and moves it into 3. And it takes the Allendale neighborhood in Port Orange and moves it into 2. You're going to split Daytona Beach, Port Orange, and DeBary in this one. So then we're moving to Plan G. And Plan G is the basis for Plan G is the school board goals of resource operations and communication and community engagement. So this one, all district lines are adjusted. And you're going to see DeBary, Deltona, Orange City, Daytona Beach, and Port Orange split 3 ways in this particular scenario. So this is the jigsaw comparison. That's the county council existing. And this is Plan H. Again, it is based on school board goals of operations and community engagement. So all of the lines, again, are adjusted from both plans. And what you see in this plan, H and the prior one, they're similar, but they are they vary on the borders a little bit as to it's going to vary a little bit as to the borders in the unincorporated areas, moving some of the unincorporated areas next to the city and 1 to 4. You're going to split DeBary, Deltona, Orange City, DeLand, and Port Orange in Plan H. Moving on to I. I is another variation of from the using school board objectives. This particular plan, you're going to see tries to get DeBary back with into 1, but then that moves Orange City into 5. So what's going to happen particularly in this one is Deltona, Daytona, and Port Orange are split, and the districts for 4 and 2 are similar to current county council lines. So that's with Plan I. So Plan J is another one taking into consideration school board objectives. So we have, in this particular one, 4 is going to reach down further into Port Orange, and you're going to split Deltona, Daytona Beach, and Port Orange into 3 different districts. So this one also keeps DeBary together and keeps puts Orange City with the city of Deltona and moves Lake Helen over into District 3. And here's our jigsaw big picture. So Plan K, this one is based on school board objectives also. So what we have here in Plan J, or K, I flipped too far, I got ahead. So the starting point was the school board. All district lines are adjusted in this plan also. We're going to split DeBary, Orange City, Daytona Beach, and Port Orange. Again, you're going to see Lake Helen moving over into District 3. More of Port Orange is going to move into District 3. Daytona, more of Daytona moves into District 2 in this particular map. and DeBerry has a sort of northeast to southwest split on DeBerry, and Orange City is also split in the same manner. So Plan L, our starting point is school board objectives for Plan L. And Plan L, what you're going to see is all lines are adjusted again. In this particular scenario, Lake Helen moves back into number one, and you have a more of Port Orange moving down into three, and more of Daytona moving into number two, and four reaches back out westward to capture more population to the west. And Plan M. So here's our jigsaw. So Plan M is also based on school board goals and principles. And this particular one, again, we're readjusting all lines from existing lines. In this particular one, what you will see is DeBerry stays completely in District 1. Orange City and Deltona move into 5. Lake Helen and the Osteen area move into 3. 2 reaches down further to capture more of Port Orange and Daytona, and 4 moves down to capture more of Daytona in this particular one. And the municipalities split in this one are Deltona, Orange City, Daytona Beach, Port Orange, and the Daytona Beach shores actually get split along Dunlawton in this particular plan. So it reaches out east and splits the shores. So this is the jigsaw for M, not as M. And that is all of our plans that we have right now before you. So what's our next steps for redistricting? Today, we'd like to get direction from council and board to potentially eliminate, alter, combine, or create new plans. September 29th through the 28th, we're going to seek public comment on redistricting plans. We currently have websites, social media, displays in public buildings and meetings for both the school board and the county council. Available for public comment. So we have another joint meeting set aside for 10/28/2021 that we can come back to discuss any revised plans or any new direction that you may give us today. After the 28th, we both collectively have to prepare an ordinance or a resolution that includes a legal description of our boundaries to be provided to the supervisor of elections so she can create all those splits and districts. So that takes essentially, it's going to take the month of November, because if you factor in Thanksgiving, that's 4 weeks. Both the county council and the school board has their last meeting on December 14th. That is our goal for the date that each board would pass their ordinance or resolution. Keeping in mind, we actually have until December 31st to get it done, but you know, I don't know what y'all do for Christmas, but we're shooting for the 14th, which cuts our timeline down even further. As I mentioned earlier, our GIS staff we're going to share their screen with their software. So any questions that you have about how these maps overlay with each other, any zooms you want to do in closer, any closer look you want to look at any particular line or area, we can also do that. And we can also answer any questions that you have about the process or where we are or where we're going. Thank you.
The agenda said we would go to the public now. Do you have questions before wait. You hear from the public? That's good? Okay. Okay. It's all right with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where would you like them?
Here it is.
Where would you like them to go to speak? So microphone in the corner, and Amy Munizzi.
Amy Munizzi, De Leon Springs. I just want to speak in support of Map F. For our community in particular, it's very much like what we currently have. It keeps us in with DeLand and Pearson. Pearson is a community of interest similar to ours. We're both rural, and we in particular are unincorporated, which means a lot to us. You know, when you don't have a city government, you feel a little bit vulnerable sometimes, and so it's important for us to be in with another community similar to ours, and MAP-F does that, keeps us in with Pearson and, of course, DeLand. I haven't had a chance to look at some of the newer maps, but I guess that's really what, as a member of the DeLeon Springs Community Association, that's sort of what stands out to us. It's important that we remain with communities of interest similar to us, and Pearson is very much like our community, even though they're incorporated, we're unincorporated, but we're both rural, and we have similar interests. So we just ask that you would keep that in mind. She alluded to 10 years ago when DeLeon Springs was almost split in half during that time, and we were very concerned about that. So we like the features of MAP-F. Thank you.
Thank you very much. John Nicholson.
John Nicholson, Daytona Beachside. I don't know if you've listened carefully. There's only one city that gets divided in every single map. It's Daytona Beach. And you all have been doing that since 1970. I spoke about it in 1990, 2000, 2010. I'm speaking again today. It is not right to constantly divide us. Now, staff said, well, that's because you have a city of over 100,000 people. Technically, we have 72,000. So if it's 107,000, we're under and over by about 30,000. If you ask Billy, how many people does she think live in those couple of houses behind her city hall, if it's anywhere near 30,000, and she's going to tell you no. There's like maybe 12 or 15 houses that are unincorporated next to the shores in the city of Daytona Beach. Otherwise, Vine Street has a couple, but there's nowhere near 30,000. So to me, I would have kept Deltona, because it's so large, whole on all of the maps, all right? Then I would have gone to the next largest city, Daytona Beach, and kept it whole. And then you try to keep all of the small municipalities attached to one city or another. What I have here is a Volusia County School Board current districts, and it shows DeBary whole. I don't understand why it can't be kept whole. Those people really should not be cut in half. There are ways to if you can keep it here, you can keep it that way in the future. Now, the city of Daytona Beach has a plus or minus, I think, 10 to 12%. So we can be over or under like 2,000 people, all right? And you guys are like hundreds of people or something. It just doesn't make sense. There's on several of the map, there's a little small section in the southwest side of Deltona that gets cut off in like four maps with the school board. That doesn't make sense. Deltona should be kept whole on everything. It is so large, and it needs to be. There is a way of looking at it that the schools are kept. Now, I understand we used to have 27 islands in the city of Daytona Beach where we get our kids shipped out. They were bused out for years, all right? And they were doing it for integration. And we had two buses with all black kids being bused into an all black school for integration, which made no sense because we didn't change anything for 50 years. Keeping the districts the same just because that's the way we've always done it doesn't make sense. So the idea that this is the way it was last time doesn't hold any water. Look at any kind of a way that you can keep communities of interest together. This idea of going north to south on the beach side, did you ever see that one? From Flagler? That's a huge
Mr.
mistake.
Nicholson, thank you so much, all sir, right. for coming in today.
All right.
Okay. Chairman?
Clay Meek.
Good afternoon. Clay Meek, on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Volusia County. Address 57 Carriage Creek Way, Ormond Beach, Florida, both District 4s, just to be clear. I apologize if my hand shakes. It's been a long caffeine day, and I'm used to having a podium. But that being said, I want to thank all elected officials on behalf of the League, including, of course, Ms. Lewis, for your service. None of you hear that enough. I know you don't only hear it from us, but it's a difficult task all of you have, and it is appreciated. I'd also, on behalf of the League, like to thank the staffs for both organizations. I know it was touched on in the PowerPoint, but no commissioner understands the burden that the late provision of information to the staffs created. This is a huge undertaking.